Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Listen.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Nintendo Voice Chat Game of the Year discussion. I am joined today by Zach Ryan, Per Schneider, and Tom Marks. We're going to talk about games in 2020, because that was the bright spot. Oh my gosh, that's right. I'm Seth Macy. I am your permanent temporary host of NVC. I didn't prepare a catchphrase to test out on everybody this time, so I'm just going to say hello, Super Ninfriendos, again. And now I've said it twice.
That means it's stuck.
If I say it one more time in a mirror, then yeah, that means it's the real one. So we're going to be talking, you know, broadly about the Nintendo Game of the Year nominees that we have. But if you want to check out the IGN like complete editorial Game of the Year picks, obviously check the site, because it's kind of a thing that we do every year. It's a little bit of a big deal. And then you'll be able to see, you know, the entire, you'll see how Microsoft Flight Simulator just one in every category, because that is just such a perfect experience. But we're not here to talk. What's that, Pear?
It's a great game, but you're a liar.
I'm gonna have to say that's not true. I'm speaking truths here.
Mm-hmm.
Preaching gospel of Flight Simulator. But we're not here to talk about Flight Simulator. We're here to talk about Nintendo exclusive game of the year. These
And Red, this is where you sprinkle in a little bit of applause. These are your Nintendo exclusive Game of the Year nominees on IGN.com. Animal Crossing New Horizons. Letting the applause build there. Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity. Paper Mario The Origami King.
Yeah.
Pikmin 3 Deluxe. And Hades.
Hooray!
Were we supposed to cheer?
No. That's Sorry. He's gonna sweeten it. Actually, I guess that's adding laughter. Don't sweeten it. We want to be taken very seriously.
Okay.
So, I would like to start with Zach. Zach, of these games, which is your Nintendo exclusive Game of the Year?
Hades. That's right, baby. It's Hades.
Why? What makes Hades your game of the year?
Okay, so longtime Nintendo Voice Chat listeners will know that, much to Per's chagrin, I'm not really a fan of roguelikes, and he always makes fun of me for it. And he says, but there are so many good roguelike games. And he says it in this German accent. He's really being pejorative about it. And I'm always like, it's just never been for me, Per. I just don't get it. And he's like, oh, you're so stupid. And, man, Hades really clicked for me. Like, this is a roguelike like none other, I would say. I think the combat is so fluid and satisfying, no matter what weapon you're playing with. I think that it encourages you to try different play styles in a way that is really engaging, which is great because the game has multiple endings. It wants you to finish it many times to see the full story, and that's still something that I'm working on now. I finished it a few times, but I like the idea of like taking a break and coming back to it later and playing a run through and seeing something new. And the story, the way that the story is told is really, really smart. Not only in the way that it has like a narrative device for why you're dying and being resurrected and et cetera, but also just the actual mechanics of how the story is being delivered behind the scenes are really incredible. The way that characters will reference things that you've done on previous runs, it's a super impressive game. And it was in beta for a long time before a 1.0 version was released on PC and Switch this year. And, I think that it really shows, what an extended beta period like that can do for a game, because that game started really strong a year ago or when it, I think it was 2018 actually when it was released on PC. But man, it is I hesitate to say it, but it's like, to me, it's damn near a perfect game. Like I really, really spent a lot of time with it this year and really loved it. And it's my pick up for Switch Game of the Year for sure. It's probably my pick for overall Game of the Year.
Whoa.
Yeah, you're
ready here first.
Yeah.
How many times did it take for you to finally escape from the underworld?
I completed it on my 36th run.
Oh, wow.
It took me 36 runs to get through. And I eventually switched it to God mode. Like I got to a point where I was just like really smashing my head against the wall, but I love the characters and I love the story so much that I was like, okay, I want to see the ending. So I switched it to God mode, got through, saw the ending, and then realized like, oh, this game has multiple stages of ending. So I switched it back to normal mode and I've been working my way through subsequent endings on normal. So
that's what I was going to ask next, is if you're still rocking it.
Mm-hmm.
You playing it on the big screen? Are you playing it in handheld or a little bit?
So I almost exclusively play my Switch on the big screen. Like especially this year when I have nowhere to go and nothing to do, I've played it primarily on the big screen. But even before that, I've rarely utilized the Switch as a portable console. I've always mostly treated it as a home console.
All right. So that is, in your opinion, the best game of the year. And mm-hmm. everyone who disagrees with you said is a jerk.
Yeah, I did say that actually verbatim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was set in stone. Yeah. Tom, we're moving to you now. Please, folks, hold your applause. Tom, you play every game that comes out. It's pretty famous. But the thing is, most games you played 2 years ago when they were on PC.
Yeah, that's also true.
Of this list of IGN nominees for the Nintendo exclusive Game of the Year, which is your pick for Game of the Year?
I don't know yet, to be perfectly honest. I'm really torn between Hades and Animal Crossing.
Okay.
I think all these games are great. B, like, this is the weird thing, is like, I think I probably like Hades more than Animal, but I think Animal Crossing is the better Switch game of the year to me, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah, it makes total sense.
Hades, I love. I've played, like, just an, if Steam wasn't keeping track, an immeasurable amount of that game, right? Like, I've beaten it. I've gotten to the end. I've gotten to the epilogue. I'm working on, I'm almost done. I've almost done the Steam equivalent of a platinum in that game, right? Like, I only have, like, a couple more little achievements to check off, and I'm maxed it out, basically. I love Hades. I just, like, I've only played it on PC, though. And, like, it don't really consider it a Switch game in my mind. I know it is. I know a lot of people played. It's not even on other consoles, which I think is really cool. Kind of a cool win for the Switch this year in all of the, like, exclusivity madness. But when I think of, like, the iconic Nintendo game of the year for me, it is Animal Crossing. And, like, that's hard for me to, like... It, you know, that's one of those messy little things. It's just hard for me, my brain, to reconcile. And, like, I think Animal Crossing captured a lot of people's brains today or this year in a year that it needed to happen. And, you know, the Easter event, their first update to that game was, like, pretty panned. But, like, you got to hand it to Nintendo in that they've been really supporting that game well. They've been adding a lot to it. They've really been buffing it up. A lot of the things that at launch... people were going, oh, well, this is missing and that's missing. Oh, there's not art in the game. Oh, there's not diving in the game anymore. All these little things that used to be there are gone, are now in it, right? So it's like a categorically better game than when it launched, which is pretty wild to think about. Animal Crossing really just captured my brain a lot this year, and I think a lot of other people's too.
I haven't gone back to Animal Crossing since probably like around June. I mean, between launch and the time that I dropped off of it, I just spent an obscene amount of time in Animal Crossing, but we're recording this show the day after the Game Awards. And last night, you know, the way that...
Dude, you just broke the fourth wall.
That's all right. Last night when the orchestra was playing all the Game of the Year nominees music and stuff, and there was that montage of Animal Crossing too. It like legitimately made me nostalgic for May. I was just like, oh, I should go back to my island and see my friends. Like, it was very nice.
Yeah, I had the exact same. I heard it and I was like, man, I'll suffer all the weeds and the guilt that I feel for neglecting it for so long. But Pear.
Yeah, so this is obviously Hades is a great game. Pikmin 3 is a great game. I didn't consider it for Game of the Year because I just feel like Midnight scratching on the door. I'm so sorry. One second.
I know what Pear's going to say. He probably didn't consider Pikmin 3 for the same reason that I didn't consider Pikmin 3, right? Is that it's a re-release.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Is that exactly. And we didn't even nominate the Mario Collection because it's not just a re-release. It's like it's a one-for-one re-release. At least Pikmin got a little bit of work. Okay, goodbye. Thank
Pikmin
you.
3 is, Pikmin 3 is a like a noticeably better version of that game in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Right. So great game. Probably out of the list of games that we have here is probably my favorite still. Hyrule Warriors, I talked about it, you know, at length. I enjoy it, but it's kind of like a 7 out of 10 game for me. And Animal Crossing New Horizons is a 9 out of 10 game for me. I really, really like this game. I think sometimes it's tough to judge a game like that months later, like games like Animal Crossing, where you play so much over such a long period of time, like 2 to 3 months, you kind of get sick of it, right? Or it just kind of like it fizzles out rather than if you play a 10-hour story game where you get to this high point of a final boss battle and then you walk away and you're like, awesome. And so your last memory is awesome. Whereas with Animal Crossing, it's like, oh my God, my island is full of weeds and there are probably fish right now that I should be catching that I'm not catching. But no, my pick is Animal Crossing. When it came out, it was just the right game for that moment in time, not just for me, but obviously for many, many people who played that game.
Yeah.
In my family, my daughter and in the beginning, my sons as well really went nuts for it. And we did all the kind of like linking up and trading items and trying to like complete sets. We did all that kind of metagame stuff, you know, telling each other, like my son had a Southern Hemisphere island, like he was pretending to be Australian. So, you know, we could travel over there and get mushrooms when it was the opposite season for us here in North America. And so we just had real fun connecting as a family over this game. Just like we had back in the 3DS days, you know, obviously there are a lot of things in Animal Crossing that are not new. You know, it's a tweaked version of a game that's established. And so, you know, like Pikmin, it is not an entirely new experience when you're playing it. But there was just this this metagame to it because we're all stuck at home. We couldn't travel anywhere. We couldn't meet with friends. We couldn't go to parties. We couldn't go to the restaurants. And so Animal Crossing filled some of those gaps. And then I will say the other thing that was really addictive was playing the stock market or the stock market in that game, right? The turnip buying, people online rallied around it. You know, platforms sprung up that helped you figure out, you know, where to find an island where you could sell your turnips at the highest possible price. And it just became this really cool quest every week on the weekends to figure out where to buy low and then how to become a billionaire, right, in that game. And once I managed to do all those things, like once you get to this point where you no longer have to worry about money and your house is paid off, then it kind of declines, right? And you move away from it. But that doesn't replace the awesome memories I had with this game. I really liked when we got the update when you got to go diving, and since then it hasn't recaptured my attention. So I'm hoping that there is a more meaningful kind of year two update to it that gets us back into it.
Yeah, I was going to ask when's the last time that you visited your island?
So I play my Switch primarily for like big, beautiful games. I play it in docked mode because I want it on my big screen TV. But for games like Animal Crossing, I actually play a lot in handheld mode. And so if I'm watching a TV show that I, you know, that is a little bit more my wife's thing and not my show, I bring out Animal Crossing. So I actually logged in last week and killed a bunch of cockroaches and pulled some weeds again.
I have a question.
Yes, Zach.
Can you provide us an example of a show that might be your wife's thing? And
that's a great question.
It's usually documentary shows about people who get trapped in religious cults, or it's some sort of murder mystery thing.
I see you two spent a lot of time with Nexium this year.
Oh God, yeah. There's a lot of there's a lot of sects, and I think one just for Jamestown came out. So I'll be Animal Crossing in that way. Many of those shows are really interesting, but I don't need to see all the footage. I can listen to it and play Animal Crossing.
So instead of watching a TV show about people who get tricked into joining a cult, you're playing a game about a raccoon who tricks people to come to an island to pay him bells and build a house.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yep. And cool. May have Hyrule Warriors, some episodes of The Flight Attendant too.
That seems pretty perfect. I don't know anything about The Flight Attendant, so
yeah.
I just have to take your word for it though. For me, I basically agree with everything that you've already said. You all took my answers. I think that I enjoyed Hades the most this year, but I think that as far as like the overall IGN Nintendo exclusive game of the year, I think that Animal Crossing, and for me, I think Animal Crossing is, it just has to be it, because like everyone said, it came out at the absolute perfect time. Everyone just rallied around it. Like you said, the stock market, everyone was going crazy. You'd have a great price, you'd open your island and you'd be like, oh no, I can't do anything now because people keep arriving at my island. Speaking of which, have they fixed that where it takes 20 minutes for somebody to fly into your island? And
no, we just don't do that anymore. So I guess it's fixed.
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite 2020 memories is like, I had a group of friends through Discord. There's like 8 or 9 of us, and we did island tours where everybody came to one person's island and we went, you know, like, oh, this is my market and this is my house. And this is my. It was such a beautiful time, like such a nice thing, because we were a few weeks into lockdown and I hadn't seen anybody, and like it was such a nice way to touch base. But it was also one of the most aggravating Sundays that I ever spent, because it was just like, okay, here we go, waiting again for everybody to try to figure out when to get on a plane. Like it was a lot.
Yeah. It is better now that we're playing it more casually, right? Like a lot of the waiting was when you wanted an item from a certain island or you wanted to sell your turnips. That's when the big the pylon happened and where it really stress tested Nintendo system. And then, I mean, it is not a great online system when you have to watch everything in the game stops while another character joins the island. We have to watch the animation. Imagine any other video game like was like that, you know, like Sea of Thieves, you drop out, you just join back in and nobody knows you were gone. Imagine you had to watch some ship sail in from the distance. And, you know, it's backwards.
Yeah. You mentioned the sort of the fear of missing out, I think is what made me sort of not want to play it, because you had to have that item. You had to catch that fish. And I was playing it too much to where it wasn't a very enjoyable experience for me anymore, even though I love it. And I know that now if I return, and I just turned it on like you do when we're watching something that maybe I'm not that interested in, or just, you know, checking in on my town. But I overwhelmed myself with Animal Crossing by playing it too much and being and chasing that dragon of getting
too much of a good thing, right?
It was too much of a good thing. It was like when I was a kid, I took a bowl of Lucky Charms before I poured the milk in. I took all the oats out because I hated the oats, and I had a big bowl of marshmallows and I ate it. And about 5 seconds after I ate it, I felt horrible because I thought that's what I really wanted. It turns out those oats are vital.
So you yep.
That's why food. It's called part of, that's why it's part of this balanced breakfast, you understand?
Yeah. Right. I had an unbalanced breakfast. I just ate a bowl of marshmallows from
Lucky Charms. If I may interrupt, I just want to say that I've just noticed in our recording here that we're in the vertical format in our mortise on this episode. And I just want to say this is very nice because I could just turn ever so slightly over here and I just give Tom a little kiss on his forehead. Hey Tom.
Aw.
It's nice.
Hold on, let me get to Tom too. Hold on, Tom. Okay.
Yeah, if you're listening to the audio podcast version of this, it's not funny at all.
It doesn't make any sense.
A lot of, we're so sorry.
Visual goofs, they don't come through, unfortunately. So Animal Crossing, I think, is probably... I'm torn because Hades is so good too. But I actually never finished Hades.
I feel this, Seth, because... It's hard for me as a longtime Nintendo fan to say that a non-first party Nintendo game is my Nintendo Switch game of the year, right?
Yeah.
Like I want it to be Animal Crossing, or I want it to be Paper Mario the Origami King, but like when push comes to shove, I had more fun with Hades. The longer that I spent with Hades, the more times I found myself thinking like, damn, I really love this game. Like I'm really enjoying every aspect of this game, and you know, so I hear what you're saying, you know.
Yeah, I think a big part of the appeal for with Hades for me personally was that I never heard of it. And then one day everybody on Twitter is like posting their sexiest, character from Hades and writing fan fiction about it. I mean, I'd heard of Hades. I was very much into Greek mythology when I was a child. So I know all the actual, but the game, it came out of left field and all of a sudden everybody's playing it. And I was like, well, it's what, $20. I got $20 in my back pocket right now. Boom, put it down, and then was like completely surprised. And like you, Zach, I don't like roguelikes, with the exception of FTL, which is maybe one of my favorite games of all time, but I don't like them. But this one does it in such a clever and interesting and fun way that I just kept playing it down here in my basement dungeon. I just kept playing it over and over again. And then eventually I realized, oh, I could just leave my basement and not have to keep starting all over again. But that was the biggest draw of Hades for me, was the surprise of it. Like I just, it came out of nowhere, and I knew what Animal Crossing, I mean, come on.
Right.
The hugest booth at PAX East, the last time any of us got together and had fun.
Right.
So
That's so funny to me. And this is not to take away from that feeling at all, because that rules, but like, it's so funny to me with early access games like that, because like I played Hades, you know, in 2018, and was like, oh yeah, this game is great. And then I played it at the beginning of this year when it came out on Steam after leaving Epic. And I was like, oh yeah, this game is even better now. And like, it just kept getting better. Like, so like, I've seen it evolve over the years. And so it's super funny from that perspective to then have it explode as much as it did this year. Because like, I play early access and smaller indie games that I love or think are impressive all the time that like never really get that recognition. And like, I wonder what it is about Hades that just sort of clicked for people in a really big way this year on a scale I haven't seen time.
Zach, you like
I have a yeah, I have a theory about why it picked up this year. It's horny. It's a very horny
God,
game.
I knew you were going to say that.
The game is so horny. Everybody wants to have sex with everybody in that game. And I think that that's like, honestly, I think it's a big part of what turned so many people like literally and figuratively turned so many people on about that game. Right. Mm-hmm. Like it is a game that is, it is inclusive and representative and like in a sort of funny way. And you know, I think that honestly, people thirsting after these like demigods helped people be aware of this game. It's like, hey, everybody says this game is really horny but also very good, I better check this out. Like yeah
usually you gotta pick.
I'm only partially kidding.
I do think it deserves credit too, because both of you guys said that you weren't really into roguelikes, and I've heard that all the time about this game, right, is that like people who aren't into roguelikes will still like it. And I do think it deserves credit in its ability to make a roguelike, a proper roguelike, right, like not feel like you're not making progress. Like every death is almost as exciting as that game, because you know that you're going to go be able to have some conversation with somebody that will move some story forward when you do. And I think that's a valuable thing too. It's just very funny. Like I really love this game, and it's super cool to see so many people kind of fall in love with it all at once, I guess.
Yeah, but the package is also really good, right? The voice acting and the writing and all of that. Thank you, Zachary.
I didn't say anything.
I didn't actually even know. I knew so little about this game other than everyone was talking about. I didn't even know it was a roguelike when I bought it. I just bought it because everyone was talking about it. And then I was like, after I died and I started, I was like, oh no, that's a roguelike. And then I played through again. I was like, oh. It's a
But it's so clever, because like the first time, you know, like it makes those deaths matter in a way that roguelikes don't. Yeah. Most roguelikes don't, right? Like the fact that like you are resurrected and you come back and your dad is like, you blew it again, shocker.
Yeah, your old then, man.
Yeah, and then you know, you come back to your second fight with Megara and she's like, I already mopped the floor with you once, I'll do it again. It's like, what? What? Like, you know that I've been here before. Yeah. Like, that's such a crazy thing to have happen in a story. And it just keeps building upon that. Like, eventually you get to a point where, you know, she has a comment that's like, how many times are we going to do this? Like, how many times are you going to let me beat you before you give up? You know, like, you should just stay here in Hades. Like, it's so, so smart.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't actually end up ever finishing it, but it wasn't out of like frustration. It was just because my attention span. I just, there's a lot of other games. But the craziest thing to me about this game is at no point did I ever get like frustrated at dying or angry or feel like I was cheated. I'd just be like, well, better luck next time, which is not like me. I get very frustrated very easily, especially by video games. So for this game that is designed to make you start all over again, to not frustrate me, I think it's incredible. So
how
I guess
you like Demon's Souls.
Now let me tell you a little something about Demon's Souls. I didn't think I liked the game either, and it got underneath my skin, and I've been
got the hooks
it.
In you.
It's not as I do definitely sometimes I feel a level of dread when I have to start over again, but I never felt that dread at Hades. I never felt like, you know what, I'm not playing this anymore,
right,
which is what I do every night with Demon's Souls. I'm like, I'm not doing it, I'm not fighting those three guys anymore, I hate them and they're dumb and they're easy and I don't want to die to them because I wasn't paying attention. Hades I think is probably I don't know, I just don't know. I'm gonna say Animal Crossing for sure.
Animal Crossing.
All right. We got a 3-2-1 on Animal Crossing to Hades with this team, with Tom reserving judgment. It sounds like maybe we got Seth Macy motivated to play more Hades over the holiday break, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely want to get back into it. I just had so much fun playing it. I don't have any, I never have a good excuse for why I put down a game that I like. It's just, I mean, I have lots of excuses for games that I don't like because I didn't like them. But I really like this game. One of the things that surprised me the most is, and maybe I just because I haven't played it enough, I think I've played it quite a bit, but I never had repeating dialogue. Everybody said something new every time. Played it. Whereas like I'm playing Cyberpunk and within the first mission he's like, let's go over here, hey, eat lead, hey fellas. And you know, don't get that in Hades. So
You know what? One thing I will say, though, if I can divert slightly, is like this year was interesting for Nintendo in general. I felt especially compared to 2019, where 2019 our Game of the Year nominees: Fire Emblem, Link's Awakening, Luigi's Mansion 3, Pokemon Sword and Shield, and Mario Maker 2. Right, which are like firing on bangers. All cylinder. Yeah. Nintendo first party exclusives, right?
Yeah, home runs.
This year, like, Hades is a third party sneaking in there, and obviously this list is all games, but like, even on this panel, right, Pear is like kind of less enamored with Age of Calamity. Like, I'm a little less enamored with Paper Mario. I didn't quite fall in love with it in the way a lot of other people did, right? Like,
I liked this, it a lot.
Me too.
And that's totally fine. Like, I thought it was a good game for sure. I just know that other people liked it more than me. And like, that's the thing about this year, is like, it wasn't a bad year for the system by any means.
No.
It was just a slightly quieter exclusive year for the system.
Yeah. I think the one thing you can say is that, you know, every couple of years or so, Nintendo reinvents some sort of game formula, brings something new to the table. Obviously, we had Mario Kart Live this year, right? Which was very different. But Mario Kart Live is kind of like, it's a cool AR tech experiment and toy.
Right.
It's not a full Mario Kart game, and it doesn't have that nuance and depth. And like, you know, so it's a little bit like an odd game out in this mix of titles. But like, when you look at all our nominees, Animal Crossing is very much an evolved version of the classic Animal Crossing games. Hyrule Warriors is very much a sequel to Hyrule Warriors, with Breath of the Wild mixed in, and Paper Mario is Paper Mario, right? And then Pikmin and Mario Collection are literally, you know, remakes and collections. So I feel like this was a weaker year for Nintendo just from a perspective of, you know, original games. And, you know, you've got stuff like Ring Fit in the past that were just kind of out there experiments, but these are all very safe bets, don't you think? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a good way. Yeah. I think that's a really good way of putting it, because it was definitely like a weaker year, but it wasn't a weak year, I guess, right? No. It's like the way I would define it. It's, and I think safe is the right way to describe that.
Yep. And I'd love to talk about Paper Mario. And like, but first of all, I'm convinced the holiday game we got was not the holiday game Nintendo planned back in February to release, right? Like, the pandemic hit and it definitely slowed down everything. Just think about what they had to do to motion capture people now and all of that. And Japan did lockdown. But Paper Mario, I would love to talk a little bit about Paper Mario.
Please, by all means.
Yep. I actually, you know, I was a little bummed about the direction of the Paper Mario games. And like, I am one of those people who says we should go back to the RPG formula, really turn it more into Super Mario RPG, but with that kind of paper look and stuff. And so I approached this game with trepidation because, one, it didn't do that, right? Like, it didn't go back to experience points and, you know, the kind of like RPG battling that you had in the past. The battle system is very different in that it's this weird, you know, tourney strategy puzzle game more than what we've seen in the past. But I actually did fall in love with this game. And like, it is, despite the fact that it's not an RPG, and it's despite the fact that I feel like the battle system was not a success in the end. It got more interesting in the boss battles, but really, it just didn't challenge you enough, right? Like, you could easily beat every battle, and things got you didn't have enough variety of items for it to feel special, right? Like, there was a attack in a straight line or attack in like a hammer formation, and that was basically it, and you didn't have to do anything. However, the game got so good when you got to the desert and water worlds. Like, when it suddenly became Wind Waker, and like,
hold on.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
The exploration of driving around in the desert and finding hidden stuff and like cracking the, you know, their version of the desert temple, or, you know, turning the towers. I'm not going to go into super detail if people still want to play this, because
you said all that I needed to hear. And that
Dude,
was
you,
I mean, Wind Waker. That game, Paper Mario, So, I'm sorry, Pierre, I interrupted you. Please finish.
No. Please jump in. I don't want to just
Paper Mario talk. Is a game that it's a better experience, I think, than it is like an actual like sequel to the Paper Mario franchise. So the last, you know, the last few Paper Mario games, because of the things that Pierre outlined, like the battle system is fine. Like the actual mechanics itself, they're fine, but the charm of the story and the characters, the exploration and the puzzles, like I think that this Paper Mario is more akin and closer to like old school Zelda games than previous Paper Mario games. Because when you're not dealing with the like whatever battle system, the dungeon stuff, like actual dungeon stuff that you're doing in this game, really they're simpler puzzles, they're easier, you know, fixes than old school Zelda games, but like I really came away with like a lot of like old school Zelda vibes. Like I thought that it was that was what pulled me through that game in the moments when I was like, well, the battle system is fine, I could hang this up and go play something else, but then I would get to a point where I was like, oh, this is really brilliant, this is really fun and great, so I should stick with it and see more of this stuff.
And that game is really defined by its middle part, right? It starts a little slow, and by the way, the writing is freaking funny.
It's so good. Just really, so funny. Really
there's
funny.
So many good jokes in this game, but it kind of ramps up slowly, and then you get to the portions I described, like the desert and the water stuff, and the dungeons and everything are just really cool. There's this really good ambient sound in this game, like the sound design, everything is really good. The boss battles are freaking hilarious too. Like the enemies are all things that are enemies to paper in some fashion, right?
And scissors, rubber bands,
and they're such bastards. Like the bosses, you know, they smack talk and they have these, like the stapler stapling you to the ground and stuff. It's just so mean. And so you feel this, when you do the boss battle stuff, and the system is a little bit more interesting with the turning wheels for those. When you beat the bosses, you feel a real sense of accomplishment. It's never really that hard, but it's fun. And then the game wraps up, and it doesn't wrap up as strong as the middle part of the game, but it's still really satisfying. Right. And there's still a bunch of things that you could find. You know, there's no achievement system on the Switch, but there are lots of hidden things that you can collect. There's a quiz game in the game again. You know, like there's just really, I don't know. Like I feel like every Switch fan should play Paper Mario. I know, like Tom, did you review it?
No, Cam reviewed it.
Cam reviewed it. I think we gave it a 7, right?
7. We gave it a 7.
I would give it an 8. I think it's a great game.
Yeah, me too.
It could, but it is also so frustrating because if the battle system had been different, and like the battle system in past Paper Mario games, like it was really good, right? Like that being able to interact what is ostensibly a turn-based game, like Nintendo really did an awesome job with that. And we've seen it in other games, you know, including Final Fantasy VII Remake since then. And like, if they had gone back to those roots and did a little bit more of that, this could have been a 9 game.
Well, and that's the thing to me too about like Paper Mario. I completely agree with you, Pear, that I wish Paper Mario would go back to a RPG, full on Super Mario RPG, Legend of Stars, or some of the earlier Paper Mario games. That's what I'd love for that series to do. But also, that's always only been half of what has appealed to me about the Paper Mario games, I guess. Like, the other half is the writing and the jokes and the stories being told. That's the kind of like the secret sauce within that game, is that it's very fun, engaging RPG combat, but then also like you're meeting really goofy characters and you're having really goofy like the fact that Thousand Year Door has an entire level where you are becoming a pro wrestler.
Yes, right? Like, so good.
Is so unlike a Mario game, and it's so cool and fun, and like that. So that's the other half of that, and I think that's really encouraging that this Paper Mario, at least, even if I didn't quite get as hooked by it, especially because of the combat system, like the fact that it has that other half successfully is really exciting to me.
And it really nails that other half. And it's like there are moments in that game where it felt like I was playing a classic Goemon game, right? It has this whole like feudal Japan area in it very, very early on. And it's just like the music and the characters and like the
the jokes about how things are hidden and how you find them. I really like this one.
It has one of my favorite, probably my favorite moment in gaming this year. If you don't want any Paper Mario spoilers, skip ahead, you know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds here. There are toads hidden everywhere across the game. Like, you find toads everywhere, and they're hidden in all these different places. And usually you can tell where they're going to be hidden, but there's one part, and I may have told this story before on NBC, but there's one part where you see like a set of like long distance binoculars. Like you would see it like a pier, you know, where you put a quarter in and you look in. Right. And so you walk up to these binoculars and you look in there and you just see like just the toad's face. Just like this, and it made me laugh so hard. It was so funny. I just like that was the moment for me where I was like, I love this game. Like this is really smart and really cute and funny.
There are a lot of those things. Yeah. There are a lot of like you look at a flagpole and you're like, you know, like there's because everybody is also 2D and when they turn sideways, they're nearly invisible. They have so much fun with.
You can tell. Yeah, you can tell that the people that. wrote and localized this game are like longtime Nintendo fans themselves and also like just love a good pun. Right?
Oh god, so many puns.
So many puns, yeah.
I am completely sold on Paper Mario.
You should play it, Seth. You would like it a lot, I think.
I didn't know if I would, but like I mean if you say that the middle is the best part, then that's a double stuffed Oreo cookie to me. So but in a video game. So yeah, I'm gonna have to check this out for sure.
You'll dig it, Seth. I think you'll like
it. All right, I'm gonna check it out and I'll talk about it.
It has some areas in it that reminds you of old games where traversal becomes a little annoying, right? Like where there's this really big open area later and like just getting from one point to the other point, it shouldn't be that cumbersome. And it doesn't often do the things that modern games do, like, you know, where the character says, oh, you want to head back home and doesn't make you go across the entire map again. And sometimes Paper Mario doesn't do that for you. But no, it's and that's why, like, ultimately, it's not my game of the year because it has some of these failings. It feels like it could, like, first of all, the battle system feels like a false start and they should have gone, they should have adjusted it and created a real item system around it where buying items or finding items would be meaningful. And it just, like, they couldn't pull that together.
Well, my next question is kind of a little bit of a one of those, you know, you can't see it if you're listening, but I just made a like a loop. Because it's okay. Yeah, there you go. Are there any games this year that aren't on our game of the year list for Nintendo that you feel should be? Like, even if it's not your personal game of the year, do you feel that there's a game for Nintendo that belongs on the nominees list? I know that we didn't put 3D All-Stars on because it's a remake of or it's not even a remake. It's just like three ROMs dumped onto an emulator. But I still feel like that game was so gigantic that even though it didn't have any new content other than, you know, you could listen to the soundtrack anytime you wanted to for the, you know, that's never existed before. I still feel like 3D All-Stars was such a huge, important release this year that I think we should have made an exception. I'm making an exception right now. And I'm going to say that is my forgotten game or overlooked game of the year.
But before we dive into this discussion about 3D All-Stars, can I just admit my shame?
Sure.
Yes. What is it?
I didn't even buy it.
Yeah.
Like it fundamentally didn't even appeal to me because they were so unchanged.
Well, your opinion is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I love those games, but like I just like there was some part of me that was like $60 for three releases that have not changed just did not do it for me, and I couldn't justify it, and maybe that'll change.
It's like, worth it for the convenience alone. You don't have to pull out the N64 anymore.
Maybe that'll change by March, right, when it starts to be like you can't get this anymore, and I'll be like fine, like maybe that'll happen, but like I just haven't gone back to them because it, like there's so many games out this year that like the idea of replaying those again on a system that is ostensibly just an identical version was like really not appealing to me. I know I say that knowing those games are masterpieces in and of themselves, though. So like, well, you know, Super Mario Sunshine is good, but the others are masterpieces.
All right.
And I love Super Mario Sunshine. I'm an apologist for that game. So
I love it too. But it is rougher around the edges, yeah. Right? Like even in its smoother fashion, they didn't fix the camera and the issues with the camera controls in the collection either. Right. But like the beach level now runs actually smoothly, and the manta rays no longer destroy the frame rate. Zach Ryan, I think, is to blame for not having this nominated in any sort of fashion.
All blame.
I didn't write a review for it, so I don't know what you're talking about.
It's very funny.
I did an analysis.
Oh, that is.
But it's also like the one thing about Game of the Year is that we do want to highlight new, original, and fresh experiences. And like it is sometimes tough when games get remade that are near and dear to our hearts, that they sneak back into a list for the second or sometimes third time. Right. Like, so how do you handle the fact it's sad, right? Wind Waker was probably one of the best game on the Wii U. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a Wii U game. That was a GameCube game, right? Like it just got updated for the platform. And like, that's how finally I feel
Pear,
about
finally Pear saying something I can agree with him on.
Well, yeah, and the other part of that too is like if you look at the games that got released this year, right? Like Pikmin 3 Deluxe, which I reviewed that game. I think that is both in quality of life improvements and the content they added a substantial update to that game.
Yep.
On the level of something like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, right? Then you also had Xenoblade Chronicles, which was a total remaster with updated graphics. You also had Tokyo Mirage Sessions, FE Sharp, which was like a pretty substantial update to that game. And then you had and that's why 3D Collection kind of stood out to me as also like not really, it just was like so, it did so much less than those in a very disappointing way, despite the fact that those games are phenomenal.
That's true.
For everybody. I think that there's,
my TV just came on for some reason.
Oh, nice. No, I was going to say Xenoblade was the one that almost made the list here because it was such a substantial update. But in the end, Hades just kind of squeezed its way. Or Pikmin, one of the two, squeezed its way. And I think Hades actually got lots of votes to be on the nomination
list. I think that's fair. One of the coolest things about 3D All-Stars for me as a dad is my son is 16. He's almost 17 now. He's a big, tall boy. And for him, this was the first time he's ever experienced nostalgia. Like, meaningful. Like, he remembers Galaxy when he was just, like, a little kid. Mm. He remembers, you know, back when he was not good at video games, and I'd just hand him the Joy-Con and be like, yeah, shoot stars. But now he can play it, and now he's, you know, streaming it on his Twitch channel, and he's playing N64, or Super Mario 64, and I don't think he's any interest in Sunshine whatsoever. But that's cool. Hey man, whatever. But it's like, it's so, well, I guess it makes me feel old, but it's also very cool to see him experiencing nostalgia for something from his childhood and like just being so overjoyed to revisit that again now that he, you know, drove me around town yesterday.
I felt that way about Super Mario 64 this time until I got to TikTok clock. And then I was like, I'm good. I'm good on this. I don't need to 100% this game again.
So I played games with my kids at a young age, and my daughter played a ton of Super Mario Sunshine when she was little. And my oldest son, who is, what is he, like 17 too? Yeah, he didn't play much Sunshine. And so with this collection, we actually played it. What was so funny?
Just you don't know forgetting your child's age. Yeah.
There are too many of them.
It's too many to keep track of.
There's like, I think my daughter is 19 now. It's like they keep on getting older too. Now they're even older. And so we broke out Sunshine and we played together, and we would hand off the controller just like I used to play games with my friends back in my youth. And we played a ton of Sunshine that way, where, you know, whenever one person would die, and like with the bonus levels where you lose your water pack, it can happen within seconds, as you guys know. And like we'd go, no, hold on, that one didn't count. So we did that whole thing. And we got really, really far in Sunshine, and then got sidetracked, of course. I think we got so mad at the mission where you have to bring Yoshi on the boat with fruit, and like then you have to get the fruit from that little pedestal and then jump back onto the boat.
Yeah,
and
it's a classic old riddle. But the traveler,
it's so hard to judge the distance in that, and Yoshi is so slippery, like we just said, F this game, and we stopped.
Nope.
But, it turns out like we've done it. We've talked about the game of the year. We filled up all the time that we're allocated in this. So I'm sorry that you didn't get to give all your thoughts on the games that you thought were missing, but maybe people can find you online and ask you then, or in the NBC Facebook group, which I'm now a member of.
Finally. I let you
Thank
in
you
before
Pam
this.
For,
yeah.
For letting me into the group with my one Facebook friend, which is my wife. Thank you, darling, for adding me. But yeah, that's about all the time we have. If you want to listen to this week's, oh wait, we don't have listener questions. So nope. If you want to listen to them, I'm sorry, we don't have any. But you can listen to this on any of your favorite podcasting platforms like Spotify to submit your own questions for us to answer on the next show. Write us at nbc@ign.com or respond to our weekly question block post on the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. Thank you so much for watching. And remember, NBC is the only place where you can
get the thing all year long.
All year long.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. Wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you, and let's make season two even more memorable together.